Hello and welcome to Federalist Radio. My name is Tristan Justice, and I'm the Western correspondent for the Federalist. We are just days away from the Alaskan Senate primary, and joining me today is Trump-endorsed primary challenger to Senator Lisa Murkowski, Kelly Chewbacca. Kelly, thank you for joining me.
So happy to be with you, and thanks for having me, Tristan.
So just for our listeners, and in case any listeners aren't familiar with you or the dynamics of the race, I want to start about you telling me a little bit about your background and why you ultimately decided to jump into a Senate race against a 20-year incumbent.
Absolutely. So my parents moved to Alaska before I was born. They had a great big dream in their heart. Life went sideways. They ended up being homeless and lived that way for a while until my mom was able to get a job up at Prudhoe Bay. And it was an oil industry job that helped them fight their way out of homelessness into the working class. They got a mobile home and a starter home, had a little starter, Kelly, and it was that oil job that changed everything for us. It was Alaskans who came around us to give us opportunities, and our family really owes everything to Alaska. I got to be the first in our family to pursue a college degree. I started at the University of Alaska. I ended up working for Senator Ted Stevens. He encouraged me to go to law school. That's where I met my husband. Nikki's the son of an African immigrant, and together we have five amazing children. I've dedicated my career to making government work for the people. I'm like an anti-swamp bureaucracy whisperer. There are just a few of us in the nation that make government work for the people instead of against the people, and I've really enjoyed doing that. Last year, though, our senior senator cast the tie-breaking vote to advance Biden's nomination of this radical environmentalist named Deb Haaland to be the Interior Secretary. And it was with that single vote that we lost thousands of jobs, just like the one my mom had. And those are Alaskans' ability to pay the rent and our parents' ability to put food on the table for kids. And now it's every American's ability to just fill up our gas tank. And I took it personally because I want to fight for the Alaskans who fought for me. It's just that simple. That's what got me in the race.
So I want to ask about what campaigning looks like from you. You're running in a state that's about half the size of the lower 48. Are you relying on television ads and radio to reach people? Are you traveling to where they are across the state? I mean, you have so much ground to cover. What does campaigning look like for you in this race?
Yes, yes, and yes. I've traveled more miles in state than it takes to circumnavigate the globe. I'm confident by the end of the campaign, we will be on lap two. Remember that old Superman movie where he does laps around the globe? That's what we have to do. Alaskans really are based on authenticity and integrity. They don't like a lot of campaigning by postcards and radio ads, and then you don't actually get to know the candidate. That's one of the advantages that I have over my opponent, who's largely lived in Capitol Hill for the last 21 years. And she only comes back every 6 years, shakes a couple hands, asks for a lot of money, and campaigns from a distance. So it's really important that you get out and you get to know the people and that they trust you. Trust is the opposite of what we feel about most politicians. And I'm not a politician. I'm just a mom of five kids who really wants a better future for our state. And I think Alaskans understand that because that's what we all feel. But you're absolutely right that when you're over twice the size of Texas and you've only got about 500,000 adults spread out in all that space, you can't reach everybody by shaking hands and knocking doors. You've got to rely a lot on radio and mail and somewhat on social media and TV. But remember, a lot of Alaska doesn't even have reliable internet or television. So it is campaigning in a very different way than how you would think in the lower 48.
So for the people who don't have radio and television, do you just go to them directly or do you talk to their local papers? How does that work?
It's a little bit of all of the above. We try and get in local papers. A lot of the local papers prefer my opponent, so they'll just ghost you. And so you got to move around that. Going out into those villages and communities is really the best way for them to get to know you. And then it's just spreads through word of mouth. We still have a very tight-knit kind of small community culture. And once you go into a community or into a hub area with all the local villages around it, everybody starts talking and they spread the word. And we have a word of mouth, we have telephones, and a lot of people are still connected through some form of social media if they have even sporadic internet or slow internet. Everybody remembers dial-up. Sometimes they even have that kind of level of connection, and that's how they'll communicate to each other, especially after COVID. A lot of us are really connected online, and so that's how we'll rely on it, is pushing through that way. And then the mailers are really helpful. We do a lot of mail and dropping things through mail. That's the best way to get to people. I've slept on floors. I've eaten whale. I've had to get frostbite. That wasn't the plan, but that happened being out in an area that had negative 40 weather and windchill one day. It just takes a lot of grit and determination if you're going to successfully campaign against a 41-year Murkowski monarchy in Alaska. You got to get out to these places where people who feel ignored and forgotten, exploited and overlooked, finally feel like someone cares and listens to them and is willing to come and live and spend the night where they have to spend the night all the time. And there aren't hotels and there aren't grocery stores and there aren't places that you can just comfortably spend the night, but showing that you care enough to do it, that's how you win over the hearts and the communities of the people of Alaska.
Okay, I need to hear a little bit more about the frostbite story. I'm fascinated. So you got frostbite on the campaign trail. What happened?
So there's this wonderful shoreside community where the wind just rips through. It's one of the most beautiful places I've been. But we were out there shooting a video to show people what it's like there. And it just takes a couple seconds of that. It was probably negative 40 that day, and we'd been outside a lot. But the wind ripping off the shore just blistered the side of my face, and I didn't have my ears covered. And we were just out there. It was actually all on video for just a few seconds, and I just felt it burning and burning. I know what frostbite is. I've had family members been frostbite before, and I just didn't see it sneak up on me that quickly. And it just, frostbite is basically like a fire burn on your skin, but it comes from the cold. And it just damaged my skin and my nerves for months afterwards. And it's like having a blister burn on your skin, but you can't see it. Nobody can see it unless it gets really, really bad. But you've just killed the nerves under your skin for a while. And it just hurt like hell, I'll be honest with you, for a long time. But I remember the community for a long time too. And all that they go through is a lot of kids out there, a lot of lack of affordable housing in these areas, and people don't have what we would even think of as regular or not even affordable housing, but even housing conditions that are even worthy of living in, that can sustain through this kind of weather. And these are the things that we need to fix, like housing crises across Alaska, where we need to kind of fix the gross inequity of funds available for affordable housing in these kind of communities where this is the wind ripping through for months at a time, and people are living in these conditions regularly.
I want to ask about the political divide in Alaska. In Lower 48, we have such a strong urban-rural divide. What kind of divide exists between Anchorage and the rest of the state, if any?
So there are efforts, I think, in Alaska to divide what we would call the rail belt, which is the road communities, the communities that the railroad runs through, and the roadless communities, or what we would think of as rural Alaska. And you can see some of those tensions building between what services are offered or what benefits are offered. But I'll tell you, when I talk to Alaskans, their hearts are really integrated. Alaska's different in that way. We're really this integrated community. What I call it is like Arctic love. And it's something that the rest of the country doesn't understand, because up here you have to live integrated. That's why I'll start out the story and tell you what I did. My parents wouldn't have made it if it wasn't for Arctic love. And every year, for example, we celebrate the Iditarod. That's something most of Lower 48 understands, but I think that they think of it as like a dog sled race, but that's not what it is in Alaska. What we're celebrating is a serum run. There were these people in Nome who were all dying of a disease, and they got word of it far, far away in the rail belt, if you will, and they didn't know any of these people in Nome. And they decided, hey, we need to save them. And a bunch of people who knew nobody in Nome risked their lives facing Arctic inclement weather like what I just told you, and raced over 1,000 miles on dog sled to bring life-saving serum to a community they didn't even know. And that's the Alaskan spirit. And we all have that. You're an Alaskan when you understand that spirit. That's who we really are. It doesn't matter if you're in Nome or Kotzebue or Ukiagvik or Anchorage or Wasilla. We understand that about each other, that we'll do anything for each other. And fundamentally, we're all integrated that way. So some of the things that the people on the rail belt love the most is that I've gone out to rural Alaska and eaten whale and slept on floors and gotten on the blanket toss, and that I care enough about our family members out in rural that I've done that. That's interesting to people in Lower 48, and kind of breaks some of those presuppositions that there should be a divide, because I think for us real Alaskans, there really isn't.
What else do you think people in the Lower 48 don't understand about Alaska?
So much, but I'll break it down like this real simply. Alaska is the foundation for the United States of America, which is why Joe Biden is targeting us with the help of Lisa Murkowski. When you want to be America first, the thing you've got to build up first is Alaska. And if you're trying to destroy the country, the thing you take out first is Alaska. Why do I say that? Well, first, we power the country. We understand that because if you're going to be energy independent or energy dominant, it's going to come from Alaska. We feed the country. Most of the fish on any menu in any restaurant is actually caught in Alaska waters. We build the country. We are your lumber source and timber source. So when they say no more logging in Alaska, you want to know why your housing prices are skyrocketing high and you've got a timber crisis? It's because we're having to now get it from Canada. And that's been shut down with the whole Canadian trucker problem and all the import taxes. But we are the people who supply all your wood for all your homes. We're the ones who create America. We have all the minerals that you need for all of your cell phones, all of your computers, all of your electric cars. But instead, we're now going to China for that. And we're going to the Democratic Republic of Congo, tacitly endorsing child human trafficking so that we can feel good about all of those electric cars that we're going to build. And that's the foundation of Alaska for us. All these resources that we have here, if you want the foundation of America built, it's in Alaska. We're basically the nation's piggy bank. And shutting us down, as the Biden administration has done, with more than 24 direct executive actions targeting the shutdown of Alaska, it's really the shutdown of America. But most Americans don't understand that all these resources that they rely on come from Alaska's backyard.
No, it's so interesting that you brought up our mineral reliance on China. There was a report from the Brookings Institute last week that really raised the alarm on this. And it seems like if we could just open up Alaska, if we could open up no other state than Alaska, we could do so much to just wean ourselves off of Chinese dependence on these critical minerals. But turning to Senator, your race with Senator Murkowski, she's lost a primary challenge before, and she won a writing campaign 10 years ago. Are you concerned about that happening again? Are you prepared to run against her in the general?
I have to run against her in the general. So Senator Murkowski decided that she just didn't have it in her to lose the primary this time. So her campaign team ran a ballot initiative in 2020 that she would not have to survive a primary. So she changed the rules. We don't have a primary election that's a party-based election. We have a jungle primary this time. So the top four people will make it through the primary and go to the general election. There's only two candidates who've raised more than $50,000 in this election. Me and Senator Murkowski are in the millions, and then there's everybody else. So I'm confident that the two of us are going to the general election. I'm confident it's going to be a battle, if you will, between the two of us. And I'm also confident that I'm going to win. But Senator Murkowski didn't want to be defeated in August. She wanted to be defeated in November. So we'll just drag this out, drag out her humiliation for her for three more months, no problem. But she doesn't have the option of doing a write-off this time or a write-in this time. She's just going to have to face the election in November and see exactly what all the voters feel about her.
How has ranked choice voting really changed the game in this race? Do you think it's going to play to her advantage like so many other Republican operatives say in this race?
So ranked choice voting is simply a data game. And I know that this isn't a podcast where people can see, but I look like Penny, but I think like Sheldon. I used to be a chief data officer for the federal government. I think I may have been the first chief data officer. I definitely ran the coolest and most talented chief data officer team for the federal government. Once you understand the data behind ranked choice, it's actually not that hard or different to calculate it. The best way to win ranked choice is to be the only candidate to the right of Murkowski, which we've successfully done. In Alaska, we voted for Donald Trump twice by double digits. You go back 12 years, 54% of Alaskans vote for the conservative candidate. Lisa Murkowski has never had more than 50% of the vote. She always comes up short of 50%, which technically means most of Alaska has never liked Lisa Murkowski. Looking at the data this year, her approval rating is as low as Joe Biden's in Anchorage. Anchorage is about half the population of the state of Alaska. So it's looking really good that Alaska is going to make a pretty resounding vote against Lisa Murkowski this year. Then you couple that with the fact that she's voting 70% or more of the time with Joe Biden, her buddy for 21 years, who literally swore her in when she became senator and who she drapes herself around. And she's confirmed nearly all of his radical nominees, those who are now targeting and shutting down Alaska. And she flip-flops on every major important issue in Alaska, including having just voted with Joe Biden on gun control, when we have to support the Second Amendment just to walk out of our front door because there's grizzly bears in my suburban neighborhood. And I have to send my five kids out to play. So we are big Second Amendment supporters. Even our Democrats in Alaska are Second Amendment supporters. She just said that she wouldn't codify Roe versus Wade right after the Dobbs decision came down because she's not that far on abortion. But then just this week, she introduced a bill codifying Roe versus Wade, taxpayer-funded abortions up to full term, which very few people in Alaska would ever support, especially in rural Alaska. These are the kind of things that are going to just haunt her when it comes to election time. Lisa Murkowski is going to have a very, very difficult time, regardless of what system is used, because Alaskans are a lot smarter than she thinks, and she condescends to us regularly. She tells us one thing, and then she goes back to D.C. and does another, and then sits there and tells the press, oh, my voters won't remember, oh, my voters won't know, which is just about the most demeaning thing you could ever say. But we remember and we know, and we're going to vote. And the fact that nearly all of her campaign is funded by dark money outside the state means she's having a really hard time mobilizing the vote and the confidence of Alaskan voters. Most of my campaign's funded by Alaskans, and we've got twice as much money coming from Alaskans as she does. Those are votes. People vote with their money, and it's looking really good that this will be the year Lisa Murkowski retires. I just wonder if she started packing up her house yet.
where do you just cited a whole bunch of issues, talked about guns, you mentioned her vote for her tie-breaking vote for Deb Haaland. Where do you think she's most vulnerable? What are voters telling you? When you talk to voters, what are they telling you about Senator Murkowski and what their frustrations are?
So the economy, not only does she vote for Deb Haaland and it cost us jobs, but she didn't just vote for the infrastructure Green New Deal, she wrote the infrastructure Green New Deal. And Obama's senior economic advisor has even said that the cause of our inflation and now recession is because of these absolutely excessive spending bills like the infrastructure bill that Biden has passed. But here's the thing, we don't get a single new road. We don't get a single new bridge. And even Senator Sullivan or other senators come out and said, because of all of the regulatory restrictions that the radical environmentalists and the Biden administration are putting out, those are all the people Lisa Murkowski nominated and confirmed, by the way, often with tie-breaking votes. Because of that, we're not going to see a dollar of this infrastructure funding. It was a bait-and-switch bill to push through the Green New Deal. I'm sorry, that was totally obvious. That's what happens when you make deals with radical environmentalists. But Tristan, who wrote that bill? Bernie Sanders and Lisa Murkowski. So Alaskans know that and they're tired of it. That's a huge vulnerability for her. The other big vulnerability they're talking about is that she lost her NRA endorsement because of all these gun control votes. And I can't even tell you how many times I hear about her opposition for Brett Kavanaugh, but that she supported and was one of the critical votes for Ketanji Brown Jackson. You see up here in Alaska, we have some of the highest child sex abuse rates in the nation. Like many, many, many of the people I talk to, men and women alike, have been sexually abused as children. So when you put someone who defends child sex predators on the Supreme Court, there is no justice for Alaskans anymore. And who was one of those critical votes? Senator Murkowski. Those are the things that are sitting really, really hard with Alaskans across the board. We have a lot of common sense Democrats supporting on my campaign because for us, it's not falling on party lines anymore. It's just falling on common sense.
So what do Alaskans generally think of political dynasties? I mean, this is a senator who's been there for 20 years. She really inherited the seat from her father when he appointed her. What do Alaskans think of political dynasties just broadly? Are they turned off by it at all?
Absolutely. It's completely the opposite of anything Alaskans value or support. So we're the people who built the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. We're the people who build earthquake-proof buildings. We're the people who will run the Iditarod. And it's not a rhetorical question if I ask you, what are the names of the people who did all those things? That's exactly right. We are Alaska. And we don't make legends and superstars and all these people because we understand that we do those things in community. And I mentioned this at a town hall once, and this guy said, that's right. You know, I work in oil, and when I'm in North Dakota, my bag of chips is my bag of chips. But when I'm up here on the North Slope, my bag of chips is our bag of chips. And that's what we understand, is that in order to make it up here in the Arctic, there's grit, there's self-reliance and self-perseverance, but it's also an integrated sense of community. We do it together. When you pull a whale out of the ocean, you're expected to feed the community. When you get a moose, you share it with your friends. When you go halibut fishing, you chunk it up and share it, and you split it among the freezers. The Murkowskis do not understand this concept. It's always about what's in it for the Murkowskis. Her votes reflect this. Their lifestyle reflects this. Every Alaskan knows this. Just how she treats people in interpersonal relationships reflects this. I can't even tell you how many people I've talked to that say, I reached out to her office, I never get a response. She just ghosts Alaskans because what are we? The same thing she said about me when I entered the race. A person with a pulse. We Alaskans are just people with pulses. Why? We don't fund her campaign seat. We're not paying the bills. We haven't bought and paid for our senator and her votes. She's bought and paid for by big tech and radical environmentalists and DC insiders. Those are the people who are paying the bills for our senator's votes. We Alaskans don't matter. And that's why we don't like these DC elitists, these monarchies, these people who think that they're so important, when in fact we know that just the people with pulses are actually really important because we're the people who are writing each other's stories.
And finally, I want to ask you about the state Supreme Court up there. Alaska, at least from a lower 48 perspective, has always been seen as this reliably conservative state. I think there's a misconception. It's almost like Kansas. It's kind of purplish, but it seems red from our perspective. Yet the Supreme Court really contradicts that notion. It's a left-wing Supreme Court. They've protected abortion. What do you make of the Supreme Court up in Alaska?
Well, this is something that Alaskans are trying to fix. There's an opportunity this year to do a constitutional convention and potentially change the process for how justices are selected. Our process right now is that there is a council that's made up of, you know, liberal attorneys that can nominate up to 3 people to the governor. They only put forward liberal people, and then the governor has to pick from that slate of candidates. And so the judicial bench always seems to get filled with people with a activist ideology. You know, there's different judicial temperaments, if you will, ways of thinking about jurisprudence. And the liberal activist jurisprudence seems to keep winning over. And so we get these people who are interpreting law and the rule of law. There probably isn't much rule of law up here in a very liberal way. And so, for example, a while ago, our legislature passed a law saying curtailing abortion and it being more in line with what the people of Alaska think. Again, a population that voted for Trump twice by double digits. And the Supreme Court said, no, there is a privacy clause. We are libertarian and we really like our privacy in Alaska. There's a privacy clause in the Constitution. So that privacy clause extends to protecting a right to abortion on demand up to full term, all the way up to 9 months. So that's as extreme as you can go for abortion protection. And there have been all kinds of attempts to try to change that by our legislature, but it can't be changed unless you make an amendment to the Constitution, which is a pretty big deal, or you change the process for how you select judges, which is also a pretty big deal. And so that's the disconnect between where the people are, where the state is, but because of how the process is set up, the bar of Alaska essentially determines how the judiciary is composed instead of our elected leaders chosen by the people of the state.
And then finally, just to wrap up, what do you want people in the lower 48 especially to know about your race and the dynamics of what you're up against really in Alaska?
This race is important for everybody in the United States. This Senate seat is often the tie-breaking vote, the deciding vote, the how is she gonna vote that determines the course of the nation. So this race isn't just about Alaska. This race, again, is about feeding America, building America, powering America, creating America. And now everybody sees we're on the front lines of national security for America. We are the border state to Russia. We are closest to China and North Korea and Indonesia. We are just right over the ocean to everything in Europe. We are the place for national security investment right now for space and satellite and Department of Defense and everything. We're the furthest state east in the nation. A lot of people don't understand that. But think about what we could do if we were leveraged properly. Alaska is the security and the bank account and the energy independence and the key to reversing inflation and getting our gas prices back down. But there's only one way that we change that narrative. And it's, do you want to have the senator in this seat that Joe Biden is counting on and that Joe Biden wants and is pushing through his agenda? Remember, he can only move if the Senate lets him move. And there's one person he can consistently count on to jump over with the Democrats and help him push his agenda, and that's Lisa Murkowski. Or do you want a senator in this seat that Alaskans want and that is America first and that is all about the people of this country and pushing that agenda forward? That's the decision that's before us. And if you do, then we need your help, because she's got all these DC insiders and the Democrats backing her, and those leftist Democrats. We need your help. We just need those donations. We've already got a strong lead in the polls. We've got the support of Alaskans. We just need to power the race, and then we win. And we're just a couple months away from flipping this seat. And what a big difference that'll make to take away that tie-breaking vote and instead to reverse course and change the direction of the country. So you can help us at kelly4ak.com, K-E-L-L-Y-F-O-R-A-K.com, kelly4ak.com. And we really appreciate it.
Well, on that note, Kelly, thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Tristan. I'll see you again.